So I just want to share with you what I've learned over the past week. I'm embarrassed to talk about the amount of time that I've put into this relative to the other important challenge in front of us. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an expert in footballs. I'm not an expert in football measurements. I'm just telling you what I know. I would not say that I'm Mona Lisa Vito of the football world, as she was in the car expertise area. All right?
I'm pretty sure Coach Belichick just said balls twice.
Did he say balls?
I think he said balls in two separate occasions within 30 seconds.
At least he self-corrected and said footballs instead of balls.
Right? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 15 of your favorite podcast. This is the FCK podcast. It is Friday, January 30th, Super Bowl weekend, y'all.
It's here. Big game. The game is upon us. We can stop talking about balls. Well, probably talk about a little bit more tomorrow, but, you know, we're getting close.
Well, I'm not the Mona Lisa Vito. Shout out to my cousin Vinny of balls. But, you know, I do know my fair share about my own set of balls, for example.
That's about the only set that I worry about.
This episode is fueled by...
my balls, not your balls.
Not your balls.
My own personal set of balls. Right. Let's clarify that. Let's just make that clear for all the listeners out there. I was referring to my own personal balls and not my brother's balls. I mean, I love my brother, but, you know, there's a line that you gotta draw.
And I love my balls, but like I said, anyway.
This is going nowhere fast. Who are we fueled by this evening?
Man, fueled by, I'm currently sipping on a New Belgium Rampant IPA. I don't typically like Imperial Ales, but my close friend, Fatty, his dad introduced me to this New Belgium Rampant Ale, and I find it quite delicious for IPAs.
It's pretty good. I'm having a Widmer Brothers seasonal ale. It's
colder?
A nice... nice hoppy seasonal winter brew.
Colder than a polar bear's toenail. And of course the green bottle, Mr. Good Sir Jameson, because it is a Friday night, y'all, in the lovely Pacific Northwest.
How much you want to bet that maybe we'll get a Jameson sponsorship before anybody else?
I would love that. You know, shout out to the A&R, the PR person, whoever I need to speak to at Jameson. Whatever, I don't even know the parent company. But yeah, man, we would love a sponsorship because we love your product.
Can't complain. So, episode 15. Man, 15 episodes. Going into the new year strong, heading into February already.
Man, we're just rolling right along, man. Just like a freight train with momentum behind us. You know what I'm saying? Like downhill freight train.
Like Marshawn Lynch in Beast Mode kind of freight train.
You know, Marshawn Lynch with a belly full of Skittles freight train.
Man, you know what? You're talking about this Jameson sponsorship. You think Jenna Jameson's got anything on that?
Man, I don't know. You think Tito might get mad at that comment, though?
I don't know. Maybe.
So what do you think about that national championship game?
You know what, man? I think we got our predictions right on that.
I think we hit the nail on the head.
I think so. I think we hit that nose tackle in the head like Cardale Jones did when he trucked out of that Oregon defensive lineman.
Man, you know, Cardale Jones, I think we called it. I called it when I said he looks like a black Ben Roethlisberger, because this dude went Madden 2005 up on the truck stick and just straight trucked the nose tackle for the Oregon Ducks.
If you needed to come up with a single image of the national championship game for the 2014 season, it would have been that image of Cardale Jones just absolutely dumping on the starting nose tackle for the Oregon Ducks.
What did Ezekiel Elliott end up with? His line was like 265, four touchdowns. Here's what we know. I don't know what the exact number of yards was, but I do know that Ezekiel Elliott not only outscored the Oregon Ducks by himself, but would have covered the spread.
Yeah, I'm going to look up those stats real quick. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to Zeke just because it's the Big Ten and I don't follow Ohio State. The dude's legit. I mean, he ran for just shy of 1,900 yards on the season. And at the national championship game, I mean, look at this stat line, man. 36 rushing attempts, 246 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns. Mm. I mean, like you said, he covered the spread on his own. He was unstoppable. He was unguardable, you know, unplayable, you know, by the Oregon defense. And, you know, props to Oregon. Like I said, I kind of softened on the whole thing. I like to kind of watch the Ducks do their thing because, I mean, they're the regional thing, what have you. But, man, there ain't no shame to losing to a team like that. I mean, that team, that was just the better team that night.
You know, and I honestly think that it would have been the same scenario had Alabama made it to the national championship game as well. Either one of those teams would have executed a similar game plan, the pound the rock, control the clock, you know what I'm saying? Just hit Oregon right in the mouth, and since they obviously can't stop a NFL caliber offensive line, which both Ohio State and Alabama possess this year, you know, and just march on from there.
Yeah, and I think that's the downfall there. I mean, the reason Alabama lost that game to Ohio State was that Lane Kiffin kind of went away from his bread and butter, which was, you know, handing the ball off to two terrific running backs in Derrick Henry and TJ Yeldon. And so, yeah, I totally agree with you in your assessment that, you know, that it didn't matter if it was going to be, Alabama in that game, they were going to win the game no matter what. So I think that all in all, and my apologies for the little bit of interference there, y'all.
Technical difficulties.
I mean, all in all, it was a great game plan by Ohio State. Like you said, you know, pound the rock, control the clock, and it really illustrated the fact that Mark Helfrich and the offensive coordinator Scott Frost, they did not know what to do when faced with a team that was going to be able to keep up, you know, scoring with them, because that hurry up offense wasn't producing. And that just killed the defense, man. That was that's the biggest knock on Oregon's offense, and it came back and bit him in the ass in the title game.
The same could be said about Auburn, the Cam Newton year, when I honestly think that Chip Kelly was shocked at the overall team speed that Auburn had that year. He never faced a defense that was that fast. He never faced a team of that athletic prowess as that Auburn squad. I think another key thing to point out is that Helfrich, he's been running the same offense at Oregon, you know, virtually the same thing. And do we crown Urban Meyer as the greatest coach, you know, for what he's done at Florida, and then translated that to Ohio State, the same level of success at Ohio State?
I think you could certainly, there's a very strong argument for that. I mean, the dude was on his third quarterback. I mean, there's not, I couldn't name another team in college football that could have survived, even with their second string quarterback, man, let alone your third string. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
I didn't have faith in Cardale Jones. Honestly, you know, to be perfectly honest, I hadn't watched him play until the national championship, just because I don't typically pay attention to the Ohio State. But I know for a fact that when Bryce Ramsey marched in there to take over for Hudson Mason, I was nervous. You know, I'm like, man, I don't know if I trust our second-string quarterback. Could you only imagine if we would have marched our third-string quarterback out there, how you would have felt?
Yeah, it's just it makes me nervous just thinking about it. I hope that Georgia never has to do that. And credit where credit's due, Urban Meyer did a hell of a job coaching up that that Ohio State team, getting all the way down to the third starting quarterback and still getting the job done in the biggest stage, you know, of the college football season. So if you want to argue that he's the best head coach, I mean, at least last season he sure was. You know, maybe if he has one more great season, he can get right up there, you know, and contend with the likes of a Nick Saban. We're talking about Ezekiel Elliott. He is currently the odds-on favorite, not odds-on, but he's a 6-1 odds to win the Heisman. Our fan favorite, Nick Bruiser, starting running back for Georgia, is currently sitting at 12-1. So he's certainly in he's in the neighborhood.
That's attractive though, man. 12-1, yeah. Meaning that I can turn $20 into $240.
Check this out though. We're talking about since we're talking about this this Ohio State quarterback situation. Cardale Jones checks in at 14-1. JT Barrett is at 16-1.
Man, I might just go ahead and call it in and put a bet on that Nick Bruiser, man. 12-1 sounds attractive to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things. We saw every game that he started last season, he ran for 100 or more yards.
Right. He went DeMarco Murray on him.
Yeah, I mean, he's impressive. he's as impressive as you could have really asked for out of a true freshman. So I'm a big fan of Nick Chubb. The FCK podcast is a big supporter of Nick Chubb, and yeah, I wouldn't have a problem at all putting a little money down, you know, on those 12-1 odds.
So let's go ahead and do that. Next opportunity that I get to place a future bet, I'll go ahead and cover that $20, man. Let's lay down 40 for the FCK pod, and hopefully that'll pay off by episode 40.
For sure. So staying in the football realm, we kind of teased a little bit with the opening here. We got a Super Bowl coming up this weekend.
Yeah, man.
You tired of hearing about Deflategate?
I am sick of hearing about Deflategate. I enjoy the parody videos, though. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel had a real good bit, and so did SNL. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like they always look for that story to cling on to. Like, you remember the antler spray with Ray Lewis? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's always that little something for the press to hang on to.
Yeah, I mean, look, man, again, like we talked about in with previous instances, if you think that the Patriots are the only team that's, like, massaging footballs and working footballs into their, you know, into a condition that their players prefer, I mean, then you're mistaken. Every team in the league is doing this. I mean, kickers do it, you know. Quarterbacks do it.
You see place kickers do it before any time they kick the ball when they're mashing the ball down, trying to do something to it, you know what I'm saying? Like, personally, I like my balls massaged, you know, at least 3 times a week, you know, and should that be held against me? I don't think so. You know, I think I summed it up in my Facebook status update that had Uncle Rico that said that, you know, Colts fans be like, 2 more PSI, we would have been in the Super Bowl.
Yo, man, that post was money. I hit that with a like, and I mean, I think it's very true. I mean, even the Colts players, man, they weren't, you know, they weren't taking it seriously. They got their asses beat. They owned up to it.
They did. And here's the thing, man. It was a 12-point deficit at the half, and New England opened up. So they detected the deflated balls at the end of the half, and they came out in the second half and scored 4 straight touchdowns.
Yeah, and you know what they did? I mean, it just really kind of, you know, to be silly about it, it deflates the argument that, you know, that they had some kind of advantage, because they actually, the offense got better in the second half after the footballs were changed up, and they put it to regulation PSI.
That's what I'm saying, man. The Deflatriots came out and just handled biz. And, you know, Matt Damon said it best. If Tom Brady would have been given his balls to begin with, it would have been 200-0.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it would have been some kind of scoring record, man. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, leave it alone, guys. I mean, the press is just loves to go nuts on this whole thing. But, you know, it's a whole lot to do about nothing, man. I mean, every team in the league is doing this. It's only a big deal because the Patriots happen to be the one, you know, the team that's in the middle of this all, this whole situation, given their history. But beyond that, I mean, come on, man, give me a break.
They have a history of cheating, though. I mean, if you look back at it, let's be honest, man. Spygate.
All right, the whole Spygate. Okay, listen, the whole Spygate thing. Advanced scouts. Okay, every team, every NFL team has an advanced scouts. Their job is to
film the opposing team practicing.
It really is. Look, man, listen. The whole thing, the restriction there is you can film the opposing team practicing, because the whole thing with the advanced scout is that, oh well, we're filming sessions of potential players that we want to sign. We all know what they're doing. They're trying to pick up on hand signals and cadences and tendencies, all this and that. You can do that. The NFL allows you to do that. The problem is you can't record audio. That's where the Patriots went wrong there. Recording the video wasn't the issue. It was getting the video along with the audio that got them in trouble. So,
wow. See, I was unaware of that element.
I didn't realize that either until recently when it got brought up. I was like, you know what? Hey, now what? You know?
So you can rationalize that one away. Why don't you try to rationalize away the Tuck rule from 2001? How about that for cheating?
You know,
the Tom Brady rule.
I hear you, man. And you know, to be honest with you, if you ask me about that, I think it was a fumble. I really do.
It was a fumble. Yeah, you think it was a fumble because it was a fumble.
Yeah, and for sure. I can't defend that. I mean, it was a fumble. I mean, let's just keep it real. I think that the thing is, man, I mean, you don't want to turn into one of those tinfoil hat wearers that sits there and thinks that, you know, well, the Patriots are... Yeah, I mean, there's all these rumors about, oh, man, Bob Kraft is, like, you know, in good with Roger Goodell because he's over there hanging out. You know, Goodell's hanging out at Kraft's house on these, like, you know, on these benefit balls and all this and that. I mean, come on, man. I mean, it's, you know, everybody's trying to show off with the commissioner. It has nothing to do with trying to earn favoritism with, you know, with the NFL.
Let me say this, man. Given the opportunity, if I'm an NFL owner, given any opportunity to schmooze with the commissioner of the NFL, I'm going to take it.
Exactly. Okay? Exactly. You know what I'm saying? That's the bottom line.
I mean, you can call it what you want, and all the blowhards at work this week were talking about, well, I just can't believe that the New England Patriots were low enough to cheat like that. And I'm like, come on, man. You mean to tell me that it comes as a surprise to you that the Patriots are cheating? Come on, man. Everybody's out there cheating. And to quote one of the greatest, one of my personal influences, Coach Corey DeVore once told me, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And I mean, it is what it is, you know. Everybody's trying to gain a competitive advantage one way or the other. And, you know, for this whole situation to get overblown like that, I mean, it's just a story to go with, you know, while we get into, get through media week. I'm just glad, you know, that the game is nearly upon us here, and that we could just kind of move on to the game itself and stop worrying about all these, like, conspiracy theories. I'm tired of that.
That's exactly what Coach Belichick said, man. And for the record, to tie into pop culture, that's what T.I. said about Iggy Azalea. He was basically saying, you know, why don't you just see the forest for the trees, you know? Don't get distracted.
Yeah, man. But so, you know, without further ado, we'd like to take this moment to thank our incoming interview guest here. We got the one and only Tim Dio Double G coming into the, you know, to the podcast, joining us for tonight's recording. Tim is the the founder of the Comic Book Chronicles, and he is a driving force behind the entire Click Nation. He's who got me going on this entire concept of getting a podcast, and it's really, to be honest with you, Tim is who helped to get this ball rolling on getting the Fresh Coast Click podcast, up and running.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to welcome on one of the Dons, a shot caller, so to speak, one of our Click Nation affiliates, Mr. Tim Dio Double G. Tim, why don't you go ahead and give us a 30-second elevator commercial, tell us where your sports allegiances lie, and give us a recap of your qualifications to be on the pod.
Well, first, thanks for having me on the Fresh Coast Click episode here. Let's see, allegiances a lot. Will lie with all Georgia teams. That would be I forget how many in a row it is, Atlanta Hawks right now.
I believe we're at 18.
Yeah, 18 in a row. UGA Bulldogs, just because they're the local team here. But, of course, got to give my alma mater, Fort Valley State University, a shout out. Atlanta Braves and Atlanta Falcons.
I mean, this is really a match made in heaven right now. You couldn't tell that we're all from the same area or anything.
You know, more or less, y'all on the West Coast now. Me still holding it down on the East, Southeast Coast. And, of course, qualifications, I'm the, I guess you call it, the CEO or editor-in-chief of the ClickNation.com website, where we have the Click Nation podcast. And, of course, we host the Fresh Coast Click and Comic Book Chronicles podcast. And maybe some more in the future.
Yeah, man. And you know what? Big ups to getting Comic Book Chronicles to where it is now. I mean, you guys are doing big things. You know, always good to see what you guys are up to, and trying to keep tabs on that. So, I mean, all in all, this is part of a realization of a dream of ours. I mean, I remember when we joked around talking about how when I first started listening to the Click Nation, was that, oh yeah, me and my brother are going to get on here one of these days and hold down a sports podcast. And here we are in 2015, we're what, 15 episodes strong, and you know, still, you know, putting down, you know, plenty of quality work. So it's definitely nice to finally get you on board, and you know, and kind of go full circle, you know, with the whole process.
Yeah, and salute to both of you, because I remember us joking online, like, yeah, West Coast Click affiliates, and you know, just bringing up how y'all were gonna get a podcast going one day, and now to see y'all at 16 episodes, it's a good thing to see.
That day is now. Episode 15. That's right. Cue the dramatic music. Episode 15 in 2015, ladies and gentlemen. The time has come. We need a movie trailer. I feel like the Click should have a movie trailer.
You need epic movie epic movie music.
Right. At least that much, right? So we wanted to chop it up a little bit about the Atlanta Hawks. We're kind of a big deal right now. 18 in a row. Number one team in all of NBA. Number one record, Atlanta Hawks. My brother caught a pretty funny joke. You want to tell? Oh yeah.
So I was watching the game from work before I left the office, and I caught a tweet from the Hawks official Twitter, and they had sent off a tweet to the Trailblazers Twitter saying that you can't spell Trailblazers without two L's. And that was, I think, I want to say it was early in the game or just before the game started. And sure enough,
earlier this afternoon actually.
That was, you know, I was worried about that game. I watched a good bit of it. You know, I watched the first half, and, you know, the Blazers are legit too. And so it's, hats off to the Trailblazers, but I think the better team won tonight, you know, just as we've done, you know, for the past, 18 games in a row now.
I was afraid it was going to be revenge of the Trailblazers with Damian Lillard not getting voted onto the All-Star reserves yesterday, and they had to name Adam Silver had to name Kobe's replacement, and he went with DeMarcus Cousins. So I was like, uh-oh, Lillard's gonna come out on the warpath. But I don't know if he was just trying too hard or not, but he I know at least in the first half he had a lot, at least like four turnovers. So they were kind of Teague was putting the clamps on him, but Aldridge with his bad thumb was, I think he put up like 30 plus points tonight.
30 plus with a bum thumb. Aldridge is such a beast, and I believe we took Josh Smith ahead of him that year in the draft. Or was it? Was that the Marvin draft?
I hope not.
What was the? What year did?
I still got that Marvin Williams jersey,
that's right. What year was Aldridge? I'm pretty sure it was either. No, I'm pretty sure the Marvin year was the Chris Paul year.
And let's see what Google says.
Josh Smith was the LaMarcus Aldridge year.
The Marvin draft was when we took him third over Chris Paul, and then at some point in time we wasted a pick on Sheldon Williams, who's not even the best basketball player in his family because he married Candace Parker, who could probably beat him one-on-one. I'd bet on that.
Let's see what the wiki says for Mr. Aldridge.
So it's kind of a big deal around these parts. The Damian Lillard story, they got a real big chip on the shoulder that he didn't get voted in as the alternate. But did you hear about Boogie tweeting to the dude that said that he would be arrested within 5 years? 5 years to the day.
Yep.
Man, how about that?
That's what you call motivation.
Boogie needs his own motivational poster.
So I pulled up the stats. So Aldridge was in the 06 draft. And remember, he was actually drafted by the Chicago Bulls and traded for Tyrus Thomas, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember hearing something about him making a comeback with the team this year, but who knows if that's accurate or not. But yeah, so that was the draft where Andrea Bargnani went first, which sort of tells you about that draft overall and how GMs messed up there.
One of those random, you know, one of those drafts where everybody just decided, man, let me just get the biggest name foreign player, and yeah, we'll kind of go from there. But yeah, man, it's speaking of LaMarcus Aldridge, I mean, he's still playing. He was diagnosed; he had like a torn tendon in his non-shooting hand, and the diagnosis was 6 to 8 weeks of downtime after the surgery, which apparently, I mean, of course, he's opted out of, and so now he's going to be playing, and it doesn't look like he's not missing a beat as of right now. He put up, last time I checked, he had put up 20-something points in the first half of tonight's game. I didn't even check the final box score to see how many he got. I'm assuming he got, like, maybe 35 or more. The dude's legit, man.
Yeah, man. And I'm trying to think. Was Aldridge on the USA national team?
I think he was. Lillard was the guy that got snubbed. And just like he did at the All-Star, you know, the All-Star balloting this year, he was because Kyrie went ahead, you know, got into the men's national team ahead of Lillard, which, I mean, you could hardly argue.
Yes.
But, yeah, I like Aldridge a whole lot.
I hate it when a video cues and plays automatically. I was just trying to get the stat line. Aldridge went for 37 this evening and 11 boards, and I checked with the stat guy, and he said that Aldridge was drafted in 2006. We took Sheldon Williams that draft, and Josh Smith was drafted in 2004.
Good old Sheldon Williams. Let's make a pre-draft deal with him that we'll take him here no matter what.
Right. I do like that Brandon Roy, whenever the Hawks matched up against Brandon Roy, I think he only beat us once in his career as a Blazer, which wasn't long.
Yeah. He might have claimed close to like maybe eight seasons, but definitely like to have that draft pick back.
So you know what's remarkable about this Hawks season, and my brother pointed this out the day of the Brooklyn game, is that when we won that game, the 17th in a row, we had matched last year's win total, and it's not even February yet.
Yep. It's a little over half of the season's over with, but they're definitely in a good position right now. It's going to be sad when the All-Star break comes up and messes up the momentum they've got going.
You know, here's the thing, though. The thing that I've noticed when, you know, because I've been watching a lot more Hawks games than I normally do, and the thing that I notice is that they don't have this the typical, like, third quarter type of fall off, you know, where they come out of the gates real slow. They just, you know, they fall behind and they end up trying to, you know, having to play from behind going into the, you know, the fourth quarter. It makes me hopeful going into the second half or the post, you know, All-Star game schedule that they're not going to have that fall off either. I mean, that offense, man, it's just, you know, it's just going to generate good looks no matter what. I mean, they're going to stay active, and I think it'll help to prevent a lot of the you know, a lot of that slumping, you know, that you normally see. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, 18 in a row, I mean, that's almost a quarter of the season at this point. I mean, that's pretty ridiculous to think about.
And give a shout out to Coach, who's going to be coaching the All-Star East team.
Coach Bud. Sure. And you know, the funny thing is, I still want to know what's going on with Danny Ferry. Like, is he coming back? I mean, he's been off the radar since, I want to say, September, and, you know, I mean, he could literally come right back right now and nobody would even notice, and they could just kind of get on with the, you know, kind of that whole healing process. So I wonder what's holding him back, and I kind of worry that maybe the potential ownership group is saying, well, maybe we should, you know, consider not bringing him back. That's my only concern right now.
Yeah, they gotta keep Coach, and Danny Ferry situation, that's gotta sort itself out somehow.
That's something that we had addressed in a previous episode. How do you feel if let's say Danny Ferry comes back, you know, this month or whatever, in time for the trade deadline, will he be able to function effectively as a GM given the, you know, the fallout from the whole, you know, Luol Deng comments, whether or not, you know, he said that or he was just repeating.
He's not an African, and I don't say that in a bad way.
I mean, he doesn't say it in a bad way. I mean, but honestly, what do you think, Tim? I mean, if he comes back, you think he's going to be able to handle business without any issue?
I think so, just because, I mean, he helped assemble the team that they've got now, and he put out all these pieces in place, and they're succeeding, you know, despite his drama that he's called, his self-inflicted drama. So, you know, if he were to come back, hopefully he'd stop making dumb statements on video or, you know, being recorded, and, you know, lock down Millsap for a long-term deal and do whatever else moves that need to be made to, you know, make this a championship team.
Do you see us making a splash in free agency next year? There's a good crop of free agents coming up this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and plus we get the swap picks with the Brooklyn Nets, so
I mean,
have ourselves a lottery pick.
How awesome is that going to be? I mean, think about this. We're going to be a top four seed. We're probably going to get at least, I mean, I'm so confident we're going to at least get to the East semis. You know, we're gonna run into Chicago and Cleveland towards the end, and that's my only concern. So we're going to get deep into the playoffs, and we're going to go ahead and get that lottery pick from Brooklyn. And that was because we talked them into taking that awful Joe Johnson contract. I mean, seriously. I mean, that should make Danny Ferry executive of the year for like the next 4 or 5 years. The fact that he fleeced Brooklyn like that.
It'll be nice.
I think the Albatross contract, often referred to as the Allen Houston, was the ultimate in fleece jobs. I was looking at the upcoming free agent crop, and there's a lot of one-year deals, like Rondo's on a one-year deal, Ellis is comes available, and of course LeBron and Kevin Love are on the list as well.
Their whole deal was they're gonna re-up when the new TV deal comes out. I think the big one is KD. Let's go ahead and get KD to Atlanta.
Yeah, he'll heat up after next season, right?
Yeah, I think this year it's yeah. So there's a couple of big names that are coming out this year, but 2016 is the year that everybody's trying to clear cap space and try to have, you know, to be in good position to go to make a run. I mean, some like top, you know, top elite level, you know, free agents.
Okay.
Speaking of the 2006 draft, Andrea Bargnani is a unrestricted free agent next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, how about that? Dwayne Wade is also unrestricted next year. Dwanye.
Remember when he was the thing holding back a Kobe trade from the Lakers to the Bulls? Kobe didn't want the Bulls to trade him because he had to play with them.
Right, right.
Future All-Star.
Oh, Apero's up in 2015. I like that he's got a cult following.
He took the Zaza Pachulia spot.
We need to bring Zaza back, too. I like him as the enforcer, you know, six good hard fouls off the bench guy.
I compare my hoop game to that of Zaza Pachulia. You know, I'm only going to get you 6 points, but I will get you about 8 or 9 boards and for sure at least 5 fouls.
Good for it.
Before we get off of the NBA, I got to hit the one other topic that I wanted to make sure to hit. Okay, there's two of them. One, Kobe Bryant torn rotator cuff. He's done for the year. So the Lakers can now officially go into tank mode, stay in the top five, which is what they need to do so they don't give their pick away to Phoenix. So they're in the clear, you know, so now Kobe can make his $25 million and rehab and then be back next year. But more importantly, Klay Thompson, 37 points in one quarter.
I caught the end of that during the free trial of NBA League Pass. It was like on a Friday or a Saturday night, too, I guess last week. I think it was Saturday night.
The dude, he went 13 for 13. I mean, that's just unheard of. He hit 11 for 11 from deep. But the thing is, the more ridiculous thing, because of course he had George Gervin that held the previous record at 33. He was quick to point out the fact that, don't forget, when he scored his 33 points, they didn't even have a 3-point line back then. So to me, that was like, you know, I kind of took a step back, like, okay, I mean that dude. I mean, if you want to put on a show, Gervin does have a good point there. Scoring 33 points without a 3-point line, especially when Thompson scored, you know, 30 something of his from beyond the 3-point line.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, the stats are in different eras, but with you still can't knock what Klay was able to do.
For sure. So doing a little bit more research, Tim Duncan and Manu are both up in 2015. Can the Spurs afford them? I don't know what their cap situation is right offhand. Or do you think that one of the big three retires at the end of this year?
What y'all think about Duncan getting voted to the All-Star team?
it's a popularity contest. He's the household name. He's been there for how many years in a row?
I forget. But yeah, supposedly, I mean, I haven't kept up with his stats that close, but I've seen some people that do say, and you know, he actually has the stats this year.
I mean,
to kind of back it up. But I mean, I thought what's his name, DeMarcus Cousins, would get voted on before Timmy.
It's a really hot topic here in the Portland metro area. The fact that Damian Lillard did not get into the All-Star game. And then, you know, the first thing everybody wants to complain about is Kevin Durant, because he's only played like 20 some odd games. I mean, if you're gonna look at a guy that they need to drop, it should have been Tim Duncan. I mean, he doesn't even want to go. You know, he doesn't want to play in those games. I mean, he's almost 40. You know, he's got plenty of other things to do than playing. You know, to even like spend 3 days or whatever is obligated, you know, of him to spend at the All-Star events. And you know, I mean, he's not going to want to play. You know, he's trying to save himself for another playoff run. And you know, they should have just gone ahead. I think it's silly. You know, the way that like my brother said, the All-Star voting is just it's a popularity contest. That's why Yao Ming got voted in every single year, even though he's on the injured reserve list, you know, half the time.
That's why Kobe got voted on this year.
Exactly. Realistically, give me your playoff prediction. How far do you think the Hawks make it? Do they make it second round, Eastern Championship? Do we go all the way to the finals?
I say Eastern Conference Finals.
I tend to agree. I think that, like I said before, my concerns are Cleveland, which looks like they're getting their shit together. They're figuring it out. And Chicago, because they're getting healthy. Those two teams are the ones that worry me, because I just wonder how teams are going to be able to game plan against us over the course of, you know, over the course of seven games. Teams are going to figure out that they just need to bang us down low. You know, just get your big men and just feed them, you know, the ball. I think that's the one thing that you can point at and say, okay, the Hawks don't have a way to combat that.
I just hope that the team stays relatively healthy. I mean, they had a couple of players, like Carroll missed tonight's game, and then Cephalosha left, like, barely to leave because of a quad or something, I think. But those hopefully just are small injuries, and the team stays relatively healthy.
All the more reason we should bring Zaza back to town. Just saying.
I think he's still with the Bucks.
Word, he's still wasting away in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I think that beyond a shadow of a doubt, we're the best team in the East, but I don't think that we're the best team in the West, or against the West, but we have beaten a lot of the top-tier teams in the West. Well, yeah, I mean, but we've been on this incredible hot streak, so can we carry this momentum all the way into the playoffs? Like Tim said earlier, we got that All-Star weekend coming up. It's going to take a lot of wind out of the sails, and hopefully it'll give us more wind and, you know, to make a playoff push, but I don't know, man.
In 10 days, the best team out west comes to town.
Hey, are you you going to that game?
Man, I looked up tickets last week after they beat. It was actually last Friday night after they beat Oklahoma City. I was like, man, I got to find some tickets for Golden State. Looked up those ticket prices. I was like, yeah, that's all right.
Oh, man. I bet you they're charging a premium now.
I mean, like just one. I mean, one ticket up near the rafters was like 75, I think, which
wow.
I guess isn't bad, but
that's horrible.
I don't want to be sitting up that pay that much and have to sit up so high.
Those are $10 seats, man.
Yeah, so
we're gonna take the family of four out to a Blazer game at some point, and they got something where I can go for less than $70, and they're gonna kick me some concessions at the same time.
I'm gonna try to make it to a game at some point this season, I guess it won't be the Warriors game.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, once you decide on a game, make sure you sneak in a Click Nation sign so you can flash that out there and get some pub on national TV.
Yeah.
I used to go to every Hawks game. I had a streak going there whenever they came to Portland. And one of the years, I want to say it was 2006, the building was virtually empty because both teams weren't very good at the time. But I was there decked out in Hawks gear with the big-ass Go Hawks sign. And I had, like, basically the whole building yelling at me because we won that night. And when it came close to – it was a I think we were up by about 9 points near the end of the game. And at the Rose Garden, the Moda Center now, anytime the Blazers go over 100 points, you get a little ticket for a free chalupa. They're doing something different now. I think it's a McChicken or something now. But yeah, McDonald's breakfast sandwich or something. But anyway, so the Blazers are down by about 9 in the fourth quarter. The reserves are in, and it's 99 points, and I'm screaming. I'm chanting, chalupas! much to the chagrin of everyone in the stands with me. But good times.
Gotta love free stuff.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go NFL. Let's lead right off with a big game that we got coming up on Sunday. Let's just go ahead and start right with it. Tim, who you got, man? Gun to your head. Who are you picking in the Super Bowl for Sunday?
I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks, just because, of course, can't stand the New England Patriots and their cheating ways.
I can't stand the Patriots either, man, but I got the Pats. I got the Pats on Sunday by 6.
Okay.
I just so don't...
A close one.
Yeah, a close one. One of my coworkers today said Seattle by 14. I'm like, you really think so, man? I work at a software company, so there's not too many sports fanatics, and there's even less blowhards. But today, I'm sporting the Patriots hoodie with the cut-off sleeves, tribute to Bill Belichick, just to troll everyone in the office.
I like the passion.
I think I like the Patriots in the game too. I was thinking about it on the way up here. I'm gonna throw a score out there too, just so I can go back and review this episode and see how far off I was. I'm going to go 27 to 20, New England. That's going to be my pick right there. I think that for all that Seattle does, I think they're going to have a hard time. They're going to have a hard time matching up defensively, even with all the random stuff that the Patriots always find ways to do, moving Gronk all over the field and finding favorable matchups. I think it's going to be a good game. It's going to be a whole lot better game than last year. I tuned that thing out by halftime. Like, after Bruno Mars did his thing at a halftime show, I didn't even pay attention to the game. I was just kind of, I had it on, but it was like, it's like when I'm in the kitchen and I'm watching Food Network, it's just kind of in the background. That's how last year's game went. I think this year's going to be a whole lot closer.
I enjoyed watching Peyton Manning go down.
That was just a mess from the beginning. I mean, literally the first snap of the game. And I felt kind of bad because it just wasn't even close. It just didn't even seem.
Not at all.
It was just a beatdown. So, but speaking of the Seahawks, we got the new Falcons regime, and everybody's assuming that the worst kept secret in the NFL is going to be that we appoint Dan Quinn, the current Seahawks defensive coordinator, as the Falcons' new head coach, probably, they're saying as early as Monday. So as soon as he gets back to Seattle, gets a chance to kind of decompress a little bit, and then he's going to take the job.
Yeah. Hopefully bring some of that defensive mindset to the team.
The whole process to me has been so funny to kind of watch, because apparently we've got all the other pieces in place. We've got our new defensive coordinator in waiting, was going to be Raheem Morse, Raheem the Dream.
Right.
I don't know who the OC is going to be yet, though. Oh, no, that's going to be, what's his name? Kyle Shanahan. So he's in place, but it's all just rumor for now, because nobody can make it official yet until the head coach comes in and then makes all the, makes everything else official. I just think it's a little bit
soon. Was it Colin, the Washington Redskins former coordinator?
Yeah, and he caught a lot of flack for the way that they handled or mishandled RG3. Him and his dad both caught flack for that, because I think Shanahan was the quarterback's coach while Mike was the OC, right? Or was Mike the head coach there?
Mike was the head coach, and yeah, Kyle was the OC.
Gotcha. That's what I meant to say. but yeah, so he caught flack there, and he caught flack at his last job for mishandling a quarterback. I should look that up, as a matter of fact.
Here's the thing. I think that the whole thing, because he's coming from Cleveland, and there's... Right, but see, the problem, the issue there, I think he's catching flack, and he's getting thrown under the bus a little bit, because apparently the owner wanted, he wanted Manziel. He drafted Manziel, and he wanted Manziel to hit the field. So his hand was kind of forced. I mean, not that... not that the quarterback play was doing particularly good, when they made the switch, but you know, it's kind of like he had his hand forced, I think.
Yeah.
But I do like the, I was going to ask, I like the way that we threw out scores there. Do you have a score in mind, Seattle over New England?
I'm thinking like 30 to 28.
Oh, close game though.
Final score, what do you think for, Tim, you said 30 to 28 Seattle.
Yes.
I'm thinking 27-20 New England.
I said New England by six. So maybe even, let's say, 23-17, somewhere around there. It's going to be a six-point differential, and I don't think it's going to go over 30 points. I don't think it'll be under 30 points on each side. So if I had to take over-under, I'd go under 60.
Okay.
So staying with the NFL, how do we feel about Josh Gordon? He got tested positive again, and he is now going to be facing a full season suspension, and he actually did an open form letter. I mean, it was really interesting to read, you know, and it kind of, I think he kind of helped to reason away some of the background as to why he tested positive in the previous two situations that he was in. But I still kind of worry that, you know, that this guy, I think he might have a problem, like, for real. It's like, if you're an NFL player, I mean, forget being an NFL player. If you are at your job and you get paid, you get compensated well for what you do, and you know that there are certain rules or certain things that you don't want to be, you know, doing, like smoking pot or, you know, catching DUIs. I mean, how are you going to keep doing this multiple times? This is the third time that he's tested positive now. I mean, it does kind of suggest, you know, a more deep-seated, you know, a true problem.
And he said this time it was, you know, he got busted for alcohol this time.
Yeah, it's like a DWI, I want to say.
Well, yeah, it's because he had gotten a DWI before. So because of that, they can just test him for, you know, I guess a certain percentage of alcohol in your system. So he could have just been somewhere just, you know, having some drinks, but then got tested maybe when he got back to the facility or wherever he was at, which is kind of messed up. But, if you hadn't gotten a DUI in the first place, they wouldn't have been testing you for alcohol. So.
And here's the thing, man. I mean, I'm all for, I want the guy to have another, I want the guy to have chances to correct himself. But, okay. Let's say you've been arrested for a DUI before. I mean, how serious is it? Does it have to be? Like, how good of a time do you have to be having in order to say, you know what, I'm gonna go ahead and put myself out there for an opportunity that could really mess me up, that could really derail the goals that I have in mind. I mean, I think the story with this DWI was that he had a couple of drinks. Like, they were on like a private plane. He had a couple of drinks on the plane, and then, you know, he got popped shortly after getting off the plane. But my whole thing is, come on, man. If you've had priors, I mean, why do you even put yourself in the line of fire? Like, why would you even risk that? I mean, the risk is just too much.
Right.
At least for me, it would be. I mean, it just, if I ever, God forbid, get like a DUI, the last thing I'm trying to do is get behind the wheel if I've had a couple of drinks. It doesn't even matter. You know, it doesn't even matter how many drinks I've had. You know, and he tried to reason away that, well, he was like, I think he was like 0.1% over the legal limit. All I'm saying is, man, you just can't risk that. I mean, not in the situation.
So I just skimmed over his open letter, Josh Gordon's open letter, and he was 0.01 over the limit on the alcohol test that he failed 4 weeks ago. I didn't know that his first DWI, the one that led to him being eligible to be tested whenever, the previous DWI before this one, it was because he has codeine-based cough syrup that is not allowed by the NFL. So, come on, man. He's sipping the scissor and drinking, you know, popping champagne on planes. And, you know, I find it very hard to not point the blame at him because, like my brother said, if you're making millions of dollars in the NFL, just cool it, man. You know, at least for a couple years.
That's the thing that kills me. If you're going to tell me, if you're going to offer me millions of, like, life-changing type of money, maybe not generational money, but, like, it's going to change my life. Look, man, I'm going to go ahead and walk that straight and narrow. You don't want me to drink? I'm cool with that. I'm going to go ahead and do that for the exchange of making this kind of, you know, making this kind of bread. I mean, it just, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, how somebody could throw that away, I don't know. And to me, that suggests that, I mean, he's got a for real problem. If he's willing to risk all that, you know, for a couple of drinks, I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know what I do if I'm Josh Gordon and I'm on a plane and I need to kill, you know, a 5-hour flight from the east to the west coast? Instead of popping champ and gambling, you know, or listening to I'm in love with the cocoa at loud levels, I'm playing Settlers of Catan with my offensive linemen like the Green Bay Packers are. That's just me. You know, lay low for a little bit and cool it. So there was a story that came out that said that the Green Bay Packers, my brother just asked me, he couldn't hear him because he was off the mic, but he just asked me if they really play that game, and there was a story that broke that said that yes, indeed. I don't remember the name of the offensive lineman that started the game, but apparently there's a group, you know, overwhelmingly numbered group of Green Bay Packers that enjoy playing Settlers of Catan on a regular basis.
I guess every team has different games they play on the flights.
If it were me, I'd be cool just playing some hearts or spades, you know, for the flight and just calling it, you know, calling it good. But all in all, yeah, I feel bad for the guy.
He'll have a year to try to get things in his life situated at least.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is that he really replied to Charles Barkley and to Chris Carter and to Stephen A. Smith. The only thing that I listened to or checked out was Stephen A. Smith's reaction. And I mean, to be fair, I try to take it in the context of, okay, it's Stephen A., so he's just gonna try to blow shit up, you know, and just make it really dramatic, and that's exactly what he did. So he kind of called him out on that, and he kind of called everybody out on the fact that these guys don't really know him or know his upbringing, his struggle, and things like that. But what I found interesting was that, how can you really say that about Chris Carter? I mean, that dude, I mean, he overcame a lot. He had a cocaine problem. So he knows a little something about addiction and overcoming, you know, issues with, you know, substance abuse.
And Carter was on it quick, you know, when he was busted the first time, he was saying he needed to get help. And he was more concerned with him, you know, outside of football than just, you know, trying to get back on the field and play quickly. Just because Carter, you know, had lived that life, so he understood what was going on behind the scenes.
In my personal opinion, I would say that Michael Irvin was more about that life than Chris Carter. 100% of the time, that's for sure.
And Carter was able to, I mean, Irvin played on some, you know, almost everyone on those Cowboys teams was into stuff.
Smoked out, snorted out?
Yeah.
Gotcha. So how do you feel about the new Falcons regime? Do we ask opinions on this?
I guess we just brought up their new coach. I think that's all we had mentioned. But I'm excited to see what the new regime brings. They needed a change after a couple years of Mike Smith. I guess he kind of ran into some bad luck with injuries and whatnot, but then sort of some of the coaching decisions during the game were questionable, play calling, and some people even said that Dimitrioff needed to go. The whole power structure is kind of weird now because he's there, but he doesn't have power to make, like, decisions or something.
We kind of touched on that on a previous episode, and maybe my brother can elaborate on that a little bit more. However, I do want to say that I kind of liken Mike Smith to Lenny Wilkins, where they're really good at taking, you know, a dumpster fire of a situation and returning it to normalcy and making a contender out of virtually nothing. But they can never take them to that next echelon, you know, the next level in the pyramid, so to speak.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, and I can appreciate the comparison to Lenny Wilkins. The first thought that I had was Mike Smith, other than the, you know, from the taking out the past 2 years, he led the team, that regime led the team to being the second most successful franchise in terms of wins, behind only the Patriots. They led the team to back-to-back wins, which had never happened in franchise history. You know, we almost got to our second Super Bowl. Yeah, right, back-to-back winning seasons. So it is hard. I mean, it's hard for me to look at that, you know, that run of 7 years and say it's time to make a change. But, you know, we talked about this before. We can't afford to sit still and fall back into mediocrity. You know, we can't. I don't think we could afford. Arthur Blank is dropping $1.2 billion on this new state-of-the-art stadium that's coming up in a couple of years. I mean, he for sure could not sit, you know, sit still and go for, you know, just average. I mean, this move, I think it's gonna get the roster enough, you know, reworked with enough time to actually change what needs to be changed and and implement whatever new schemes they might be running from compared to the Mike Smith era. And Tim, like you mentioned earlier, injuries aside, the game that does it for me was that Detroit game, the London game.
Yes.
I mean, it was just it's poor clock management, and it's just, you know, you don't lose that game. That's all it is. You just don't lose that game, not with that big of a lead and with all of the factors that they had. And Mike Smith had done that, you know, consistently enough to where, I mean, it got concerning. I mean, people started to wonder, what is this guy's problem with managing the clock? You know, I mean, it's just one of those issues that, you know, you can't afford.
He blew another game in the dome. Was it the Bengals?
Yeah, I mean, it's become a trend, you know. And the thing that concerns me, you talk about the messy and weird front office situation. So yeah, Dimitroff had the he's going to be off of like doing drafting and all that. Pioli's going to be the guy that's going to be the point man for that. But the weird thing is that Dimitroff is still going to be the one that has a final say. So I mean, granted, Pioli and Dimitroff have history from working in the Patriots front office beforehand, so it's not like they're going to have a whole lot of varied opinions. I'm sure that they're going to talk about, okay, well, here's what we really want to do. I don't think they're going to have conflicting opinions is what I'm getting at. There's not going to be an issue with, okay, well, Pioli wants this guy in the draft, but Dimitroff feels better about this guy in the draft. I mean, I don't think that's right. Going to be a problem. But it's just weird. You know, it's a weird dynamic. It's really interesting that Blank chose to keep Dimitroff and even Pioli. I mean, you clean house with the head coach. The defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, he just signed with San Diego to be their linebackers coach like the other day. And then our former offensive coordinator is going to be the OC at Tampa Bay. So it's a new regime as far as coaching goes. But then the front office, the guys that are getting the groceries together, are all pretty much the same. So I wonder what, you know, when that's going to give and when they're going to say, all right, man, we need to go ahead and clean this all up.
Yeah.
I don't think it was necessarily a problem with the ingredients that were going into the recipe. I think that there may have been a few. Let's not even go that soft. I know for a fact it's because we suffered from a lot of injury. We've highlighted it before on the podcast that the Falcons sustained 80%, you know, more injuries than anyone else on the offensive line over the past 2 years. You know, and to me, come on, man. You know, sure, you can call it an excuse, you can call it whatever you want, but when you lose the war in the trenches, you lose the war, period. You know, that's where the games are won and lost. And not having an offensive line, having a brand new offensive line this year, and then having three go down in the first 4 weeks, that's tough, man. I don't think there's anything wrong with the core group of guys that we got right now. I think that we have the talent to go deep. You know, we just need to stay healthy for 1 year and, you know, do something big like we should have been doing the past 2 years.
Remains to be seen. Definitely got to see who we take in the draft also. When the NFL Network starts showing the NFL Combine, I'll be paying attention.
Oh, absolutely. We should do a draft preview episode. I haven't, to be perfectly honest, I haven't done the homework on the NFL draft yet. I've still been trying to catch up on NBA, keep up on the Hawks, and the podcast.
The only other thing that I want to wanted to hit on real quick then, talking about local sports, Georgia football How are we feeling about that? I mean, it was kind of a letdown season this year, if you can consider what we won 10 games this year.
Yeah,
10-3.
And they lost their offensive coordinator to Colorado State.
I think that was a move that everybody, you know, wanted to throw all that blame on Bobo, and I'm in that camp. You know, you don't do a fake handoff and then a pitch, you know, all this and that on a first and goal situation. There are too many times when it felt like he made overly complex choices, you know, when you could have just, you know, hand the ball off to one of your Heisman, you know, candidate running backs and probably get the job done. So
yeah, I like how he went from, at least people here in the area used to, they went from ridiculing and blaming Bobo to seeing how he became one of the best offensive coordinators in the country. You know, Georgia was scoring like 30 plus points a game, to then also not, they wanted to keep him.
I guess I failed to realize that until it was thrown in my face that we had averaged 30 plus points for the last 2 years running. But I don't know, man. Honestly, I don't like the way that he always tried to get cute in the second half and mix it up. I mean, if it's working, keep running it until they can stop it. And once they stop it, then you can go and get cute and start going for the swing passes and the, you know, screen game or whatever else, you know, you might, whatever tricks you got in your sleeve. But stick to the bread and butter is what I'm saying.
Yeah, because was it the South Carolina game he did that?
It was the South Carolina game he did that. The Florida game he did that.
I don't know what happened at Florida game.
I don't either.
You could see that loss coming though.
You know just talking about the Florida games got me heated. Like I'm yelling from like 5 feet away. I don't understand how in the hell we managed to not realize that Florida's running like three offensive plays, all of which are run plays, and we don't do anything to stop that. I mean, that to me, that pissed me off. Yeah, they threw it like less than 10 times, man. Like, I'm honestly getting upset about that. Like, thinking about how we threw that game away. Like, we didn't know what they were going to do.
Yeah, I was being generous, giving them 12 passes.
They threw the ball six times. It was six pass attempts. I don't know. I don't know what happened. But the point is that Bobo went away from the run game in that game. Bobo also went away from the run game in the Georgia Tech game, which we should have won as well. Anyway, as much as I would love to continue talking Georgia football, I could talk that until the cows come home. I just wanted to say, Tim, I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule to be with us here on the FCK pod. We appreciate you.
Thanks, fellas, for having me. Of course, I'll be back.
Absolutely, man.
Can't keep me away too long.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Tim, you know, for taking, you know, like my brother said, thanks for taking some time out. We got this time zone differential to worry about. But let's plan on doing something again in the future. Hey, we didn't even hit any Braves talk. You know, so we got a whole other segment that we can work on right there. But, you know, again, you know, much love. You know, thank you for initially, you know, bringing us into the Click family. And for, you know, for really helping get this, you know, get this project, you know, get this project rolling. We're just glad to be a part of it, man. And you've played a big role in all that. So much love and, you know, much success to all your endeavors, you know, in the future as well.
Most definitely. I'll be in touch.
So go ahead and give us whatever. This is your plug right here, man. So give us how to get a hold of you on Twitter, Facebook, whatever social media you got for us.
Oh, yes. Plugging time. Let's see. Go to the website, theclicknation.com. Follow me on the Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe to YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Also, just search for The Click Nation.
Word up, man. All right, Tim. Hey, we appreciate it. We won't take up any more of your time, man. Let's plan on having another get together at some point. Let's get some more Click members up in here, man. Let's get some more sports talk going, and let's keep this thing rolling. So, again, much thanks to you, to the whole Click Nation, and we'll catch you on a future episode.
You got it.
All right. Take care, man.
All right. Peace.